Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Underneath the Church of Santa Maria della Concezione, a church that was commissioned by Pope Urban VIII in 1626, lies an ossuary built by the Capuchin order comprised of the remains of 4,000 friars, literally the bones of men that died between 1500 and 1870 are arranged along the wall and in varied designs, arches and so forth, in a display that is, well, jarring at the outset. Mark Twain even wrote about it in 1867 and explained it to the world in what is possibly my favorite book of all time, The Innocents Abroad. Part of the problem with something like that is the macabre contrast of death and veneration. Literally displaying a series of frescoes made of vertebrae and then position a few standing 15th century monks with robes within the sectarian context is kind of dark. In other contexts, though, not so much. You see, Walt Disney managed to broker a number of skeletons himself from the UCLA Medical Clinic to adorn his as yet unchristened attraction called the Pirates of the Caribbean. These were placed all through the attraction with no fanfare whatsoever, and Disney seemed to see this acquisition as a combination of both the utilitarian as well as authentic. The ride would ultimately give way to a motion picture, stretching a degree of meaning over what is one of the most beloved attractions to this day and my personal favorite. Now we'll chat about this today on Box Number 7. March 18th, 1967, exactly 1 month before my birthday and 3 months after the death of Walt Disney himself, the Pirates of the Caribbean opened to the public. Disney was fascinated in general with the West Indies pirates in the Caribbean Sea from the 17th and 18th centuries, and he drew from common lore with no direct connection to a single pirate. It would also be the last ride personally curated by Disney himself. The original installations were put in by Aero Development and involved 630,000 gallons of water, 53 audio animatronic animals and birds, a 75 animatronic pirates in varying forms. And it takes 3 days to drain and refill the entire display during renovations. Oh, yes. And bones. Human bones. Bones from people that might have actually ridden Mr. Toad's wild ride at some point. Now, unlike the Capuchin Monastery, the pirates' ride would be subject to revision. You can't really do that with the monastery because each dead friar has most likely been cataloged, defined, and subject to an IKEA-level parts manual that tells pilgriming relatives where their Uncle Luigi's femur is or in what part of the frescoes he can be found. But Disney grabbed these bones anonymously, so over the years, the skeletal remains were replaced by a silent attrition, such to the point that Disneyland will now tell you officially that all human bones have been replaced by life-scale models. Unofficially, however, it is claimed by anonymous voices that the skull on the headboard of the bedded pirate is still legit. But opening day, that wasn't the focus, and the focus was not about the bones, but on the sum total of the experience. The entire creative and thematic majesty of the ride can be credited to the work of one man, Mark Davis, the man Disney tackled with the visionary bulk of the job. Mark immersed himself in the world of pirate literature, lore, and history, and extrapolated his own illustrations. He literally lived, breathed, and ate the concept, and it is that level of dedication that can be felt in the core of the ride's soul even to this day. Disney refers to their creative team members as quote-unquote Imagineers, and since Mark wasn't working with a team or a committee or really any special budget, the greatest ride of my childhood literally makes Mark Davis the greatest of all the Imagineers. His creations, designs, facial expressions, and caricatures reverberate right through to this day, and we will see that soon enough. So the ride is essentially this. You are essentially floating along at night in a Louisiana bayou after having boarded at Lafitte's Landing, named after the French-American pirate Jean Lafitte. You glide along smoothly through the swamp. You're hearing the frogs and you're seeing the fireflies. And to your right is the Blue Bayou restaurant, which looks like the back end of a plantation gathering of some sort. An old man rocks silently on a houseboat on a rocking chair as your boat approaches the dark tunnel and waterfall. And directly above is a talking skull with these crossed swords going underneath. Unofficially known as Captain X, and he makes this following proclamation.
Avast there. It be too late to alter course, mateys. And there be plundering pirates lurking in every cove, waiting to board. Sit closer together and keep your ruddy hands inboard. That be the best way to repel boarders. And mark well me words, mateys. Dead men tell no tales. Ye come seeking adventure and salty old pirates, eh? Sure, you've come to the proper place. But keep a weather eye open, mates, and hold on tight with both hands, if you please. There be squalls ahead, and Davy Jones waiting for them what don't obey.
The voice here, of course, delivered by Xavier Atencio, one of the most formidable and omnipresent voices in the entire Disney canon, to include the Haunted Mansion ride, Green Grinning Ghosts Come Out to Socialize. So you immediately begin a plunge down a waterfall in the dark, and by the time the mist clears and you've heard the baneful cries of dead men tell no tales, and then you plunge a second time, you are now in the world of the dead pirates. Skeletons at war, guarding their loot, their treasure, weathering storms, and even playing chess in the captain's quarters. Clearly, a pirate's curse is at play here. Next is the crossfire sequence in which you are caught in the middle of a war between ships, cannonball fire hitting the water next to your boat. Now, the ride has been updated to include Captain Hector Barbossa warning Captain Jack Sparrow of his impending doom. The next phase of the ride is something called the Isla Tesoro, where we are confronted with the pirates pillaging, holding the mayor hostage of the little town in lieu of Jack Sparrow's whereabouts. Jack Sparrow, of course, hiding visibly nearby to the people in the boat. Further down the ride, we see the conclusion of this chronology, where the entire city is now on fire, courtesy of the pirates, and Jack Sparrow is hiding inside of a whiskey barrel, but at the same time getting a good look at a pirate map that happens to contain the location to Bounty and Treasure. Imprisoned pirates, hoping to escape a jail cell, are whistling at a dog who happens to be holding the jail keys in his mouth and just out of reach. That moment matters, but you'll see why in just a minute. And then lastly, we see a sodden Jack Sparrow sitting in a chair on top of a huge cache of treasure, waving some of the loot around and toasting the passerby. And that's basically it. Now, understand that this description by me is not in any way meant to convey something that has been magical to me since I was 5 years of age. If I was to start describing the original ride, it would, of course, not involve names like Jack Sparrow or Captain Hector Barbossa, as they are characters from the motion picture adaptation of Pirates of the Caribbean. A franchise now 5 movies deep, the film is essentially what I call a quote-unquote cinematic extrapolation. In other words, Disney's encapsulation of pirate lore, cross-pollination of legends and myths never had a cogent storyline. The screenwriters for Pirates of the Caribbean took the abstract and made it concrete by introducing a set of characters that would essentially worm their way into the hearts of the public, including mine. First and foremost, we cannot proceed without the incredible contributions of one Johnny Depp, who gave us the enigmatically lovable Captain Jack Sparrow. Now, Sparrow's genesis has a couple of factors. One, the supposed template for the character as a conceptual framework was Tunisian pirate Jack Ward, who had a 5-year career between 1605 and 1610, and it was said that he was brash, and his endless intoxication made him a political liability with his profiteering sponsors. There are arguments against this modeling as well, as Jack Ward was an ultimate convert to Islam, he transported Catholic slaves, and even found himself in the Red Sea, engaged in his work at times. Sparrow was the opposite of these things, which we'll discuss as well a little bit later. Also, Depp claims to have created the essential character movements, diction, and essence from a hybrid of Rolling Stones guitarist Keith Richards, as well as Looney Tunes character and love-stricken skunk Pepe Le Pew. By the way, that is true. Keith Richards shows up in some of the hidden Easter eggs on the first DVD, and then later shows up as Jack Sparrow's father later in the canon. So the other primary character is Captain Barbossa, Sparrow's nemesis, played by Jeffrey Rush. And as an aside, this actually happens to be my favorite character, Jack Sparrow notwithstanding, of course. The interesting thing about the film is how much of the ride's scenes actually appear in the film. Thus, a hat tip of ultimate respect to Walt and his magical idea, or should I say, the microcosmically dense efforts and creations of Imagineer Mark Davis. The scenes of the town assault and the women being chased are nearly identical. As I mentioned before, the jail scene in which we see jailed inmates attempting to coax a dog into handing over the jail keys is immediately recognizable. In fact, it is many people's favorite scene on the ride, and possibly mine too. And in the film, we're treated to the addition of Jack Sparrow laying in the adjoining cell and uttering a phrase that made me laugh with deep joy.
Come here, boy! Come here, boy!
You can keep doing that forever. The dog is never going to move.
Oh man, I love that line. Possibly my favorite line in the first film. By the way, a shout out to the brilliant terrier mix named Chopper, who played the dog in the film. The pirate song, A Pirate's Life for Me, is also organic to the ride, believe it or not, but it also appears in the film. Barbossa drinking wine under the pirate's curse and having it cascade through his ribcage? Yeah, it's there too. And on and on. Cannon fire is also used to introduce what is called the hidden Mickey. In other words, there's this concept of a generic shape of a Mickey's head and ears hidden throughout Disneyland, as well as the films. And one particular cannon shot has a distinct shape of Mickey on the plume of smoke coming out of the cannon. You can find it. Just look for it. Oh, and one last thing. At the outset, we are, of course, confronted with an enigmatically and morally ambiguous character in Captain Jack Sparrow. Implications that he has reneged on many deals and broken many hearts. Ironically, this was the same bedrock cornerstone we are given with, get this, Han Solo in Star Wars, A New Hope. The first one that came out in 1977, but oh yes, I know, the fourth one in the series, blah, blah, blah. If you're into Star Wars, great, but the prequels, they're dead to me. Dead to me. Anyway, for some reason, George Lucas, seemingly huffing paint and signing up for night classes at the I don't care if it isn't broke, I'm fixing it tech school for cinematic equivocation, decided to take the cantina scene and basically do, let's see, what's that technical term? There's a, ruin it. He ruined it. Anyway, for 40 years, Han Solo blatantly shot another bandit named Greedo in cold blood while seated across from him at the cantina. This was a defining ambiguity that was applied to the man. Lucas decides one day to insert a millisecond of Greedo pulling the trigger first, thus remaking Solo into the moral agent I didn't want him to be. So it stands to reason that Disney could have possibly committed the same cutting room felony, but decided to listen to their better cinematic angels. But in a way, they did do something cooler. They present to you a scene in the third DVD where the part where the deleted scenes are put there aside for your consumption. Go through those, and you will find a brief scene that completely remakes Sparrow into a moral agent, although I wouldn't have minded if they did it here. So here's the backstory. Sparrow is in a room with Beckett from the East Indian Trading Company, obviously working for them, and Beckett is glaring about how he set Sparrow's ship, the Pearl, on fire and sent it to the depths of the oceans over Sparrow's supposed betrayal, which was related to the cargo he was supposed to haul. When Jack Sparrow replies under his breath, "People aren't cargo." So here you are. One scene alone explains why the sight of the Black Pearl strikes fear into men, because it was the result of a Faustian deal between Sparrow and Davy Jones. In other words, it's black because it is charred, and it shouldn't exist at all for all points and purposes. It's a maritime zombie, if you will. This also diminishes, by the way, the possibility that Tunisian pirate Jack Ward was the template for Sparrow's character, as Sparrow makes theological quotes from a Judeo-Christian framework and not one of an Islamic framework. And he also did not deal in slaves. But at the end of it all, I need to know one thing. Is a skull actually sitting atop the headboard on a bed on my favorite ride in the world? I think I'm going to write them a letter and ask Disney if I can update my organ donor option on my driver's license to include having my bones displayed next to Hector Barbossa, played, of course, by Jeffrey Rush, my favorite character in the entire canon. Oh, and another thing. If they even make another Pirates film, somebody please, please make me an extra. I don't care if I'm a prisoner, getting hanged, tortured, garroted, or keel-hauled against the barnacle-ridden hull of a ship. I want in. Dead men tell no tales for sure. So I'd like to enjoy a few more tales before I get out of here myself, as I am, at least for now, as they say, on the east side of the map. And this is box number 7.
It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 12/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.